Chapter 10. It wasn't long into their drive before Kit began having second thoughts. He was nice to her, sure. But what would a whole life with Manny look like? Was it just going to be the two of them all the time? Did he have family? Friends? What was she going to do all day? Not that she had ever liked school, but it had been a place to escape the foster homes and get a good meal. Sometimes she even learned something. Would Manny even know to put her in a school somewhere? Manny slapped the seat back so loud she jumped.
"We should celebrate this new partnership," he said. "Where should we go, kitty cat? Somewhere fun? We could drive to San Antonio and have enchiladas on the Riverwalk. We could go tubing at Schlitterbahn. Anything you want."
"I don't know where those places are," she said. She was feeling guilty for thinking about leaving him, but eventually she would need to figure out a backup plan in case things didn't work out.
"You pick." "Come on, this is your chance," he said. "Okay, look, how about I surprise you?"
A surprise. Another thing no one had ever done for her. She pictured the props of a surprise as she understood it. Balloons and a cake. A bike. She could stay around for this. Within an hour, she started seeing signs for a place called Galveston. Clues that they were entering a different climate started to appear. Bushy oleanders lined the esplanade between several lanes of traffic on Interstate 45, wind whipping them around, scattering across the windshield blossoms of white and apricot. The sticky, salty air a coating on her skin. Gulls appeared, cutting through the sky, settling on billboards and dropping guano. Then the highway took them across a great causeway that stretched over miles of marsh and water rippling below. The bridge swept them up, high above the waves. She felt dizzy looking out over the expanse, but could not take her eyes away. She saw little splashes bloom at intervals. Fish? Dolphins? She couldn't imagine what wonders teemed beneath the surface.
"Is that the ocean?" she asked.
"Not exactly. That's a big waterway. We'll be at the coast in a few minutes. Don't tell me you've never seen the Gulf of Mexico before."
She shook her head.
"God damn!"
He clicked his tongue. The causeway spat them out onto Galveston Island, and they pulled up to a single stoplight at the coastline. The entire gulf spread out, waves tumbling toward them. Manny took a right onto a narrow highway. To their left was a long gray beach and a line of cars and a broad boardwalk between the two. Traffic immediately slowed down as people looked for parking and took in the sights. As they rolled down Seawall Boulevard, Kit observed the little scenes like a comic strip. Surfers undressed behind their cars, peeled wetsuits to their waists. Sunburnt children sat in open trunks, legs dangling, sucking on popsicles or scraping black gobs of tar off their feet with shells. A man smeared oil all over his wife's freckled and rounded back, her bathing suit straps fallen to each side. A jeep full of shirtless young men cruised to the sounds of the Beach Boys, hung their arms out the windows, and a group of beautiful girls in rainbow bikinis swanned by on roller skates. Manny U-turned and parked along the boardwalk.
"Hey, I'm just gonna grab us some treats," he said,
and pointed to a pretty, darkly tanned woman in cutoff shorts and a crocheted bikini top standing under an umbrella. Kit looked back at him and then to the ocean, which looked bigger now, menacing.
"You scoot down to the beach, splashing the waves. I'll be right back."
Then he removed his shirt, folded it neatly, and lay it on the front seat. He walked away, his strong back catching the warm tint of the sun. Kit considered waiting in the car until they could go down together, but she didn't want him to think she was afraid. She found a set of steps and made her way along the craggy seawall to the sand. Blue crabs scuttled sidewise into rock crevices. Flies swarmed a putrid fish that was tangled in strands of net. Kit was overheating in her new blue jeans. She sat down and yanked off her shoes and socks and rolled her cuffs up to her knees. The sand was not loose and gritty like she had imagined, but fine and wet, more like concrete before it has cured. There was a powerful smell of salt, fish, and minerals. She approached the water, sharp bits of shell underfoot, and squatted near the slow, lapping tide. She watched the exchange of sea and land, waves slurping up sand and drawing it back, then spitting out shells, plants, replacing some of the sand it had taken.
"Why don't you go in?"
Manny said, his voice pushed back by the wind. She turned around and saw him standing there with a bright yellow towel over his shoulder and in his hands, two dripping ice cream cones. She took one of the cones and licked up the layer of soft, sweet melt.
"Thanks," she said. "Where'd you get that towel?" she asked.
"Oh, I made a friend up there."
He winked.
"She thought you were cute. I told her you'd never been to the beach before, so this is all her treat."
Kit looked at the woman under the umbrella. Her shorts were cut so high Kit could see her butt folds. The woman turned and waved and smiled a big, white smile at Manny. Kit was suspicious at the idea of perfect strangers giving her things for no reason. But then Manny had been a stranger not that long ago, and here they were. When Kit had finished the last of her ice cream, Manny took her by the hand and led her to the water. She leaned back.
"I'm not too good at swimming," she said.
She flashed to Paul Mosher chucking her into the public pool, the water up her nose, down her throat. How she'd flailed and tried to scream, but the water had overcome her and she sank, thrashing, and watched the distorted shapes of people passing by without looking. How someone's dad had picked her up and laid her on her back at Paul's feet and pumped her chest till she spewed pool water, her lungs on fire, and how Paul had teased her afterward to keep things light, to downplay how he'd almost killed her.
"I won't let you go," Manny said.
He picked her up and rested her on his hip like a much smaller child. She held tight to his neck and tried to look brave, but every muscle in her body was tense. She was ashamed she hadn't learned to swim and hoped Manny wasn't going to test her. Manny waded into the bath-warm waters until they were in up to her chest, and they bobbed up and down with the gentle current. The salt piqued her pores and tingled in her cuts. She loosened her arms around his neck and closed her eyes.
"Okay, now I'm going to teach you to float," he said,
peeling her hands away from his neck.
"You're going to have to lean back and hold most of your breath in your lungs so you stay on top of the water. Take little bitty sips of air and let them out just as small."
Kit did as he said, lowering her head into the warm water, but held tight to his hands. She felt her rear end sinking and pulling her down. It scared her. When she tried to sit up, her head dunked below the surface and she took in a great gulp of brine. Manny lifted her, sputtering and coughing, and whacked her on the back.
"Strike one. Let's try that again," he said.
"I'm not ready,"
Kit said through the matted hair over her face. She was out of breath and the waves were getting bigger.
"You can't wait for ready, kiddo,"
Manny said.
"You can do this. Be cool, okay? Now, let's go."
She didn't like being rushed, but Manny talked to her like he believed in her. She held tight to his hand and stretched herself out, straighter this time, and kept her lungs mostly full. The salty water lapped in her ears and stung her eyes. She could feel the great movement of the ocean all around her and Manny's hand in hers. The water was perilously close to her lips, to filling her lungs and pulling her under. But knowing he was there was enough. On their way back to the seawall, big, gelatinous blobs splayed out on the sand, clear and glassy. She found a strange blue and purple one that was filled with air, a liver-shaped bubble. She poked it with a stick.
"That's a man-o-war," Manny said, squatting down next to her. "Hell of a wallop. They'll sting you after they're dead, too."
He stood up, swept the sand off his calves, and walked toward the stairs.
"Can't sting me," she said to herself and poked it with her bare finger.
They changed in little huts on the boardwalk. Kit struggled with the heavy, wet jeans and was glad for the new clothes Manny had brought, a plain white t-shirt and a green pair of shorts. They walked north along the seawall for a half hour, the breeze coming off the waves too loud to make talk practical. The sun had dropped behind the island, casting a nectarine glow over the gulf. Back at the car, Manny suggested they get something to eat. Kit was grateful she didn't have to ask him for food. He chose a restaurant with a giant, lifelike crab on the roof. Inside, there were white tablecloths, and the waiters wore black. Kit tugged on Manny's hand to leave, afraid they would get kicked out. But he strode ahead and asked for a table with a view. The maitre d' looked circumspect, but escorted them to a table near the windows.
"Put your napkin in your lap," Manny whispered,
and Kit opened the ironed cloth and spread it across her legs. She could feel the sand gathered around her toes and ignored an impulse to pull off her boot and dump it on the floor. They ate a feast of chilled crab claws, fried oysters, and shrimp remoulade. Kit had never seen these foods before, let alone tasted them. She was shocked and delighted by the perfect morsels of crab, the oysters, briny and creamy within the cornmeal crust, the plump pink shrimp in their tangy sauce. Kit was so giddy she forgot to worry about how expensive the meal was, even after Manny ordered a banana dessert prepared tableside and set aflame. When the waiter went for the check, Manny folded his napkin, took her hand, and led her quietly out the door. The sidewalks were full of people, some strolling, others, saddled with wet towels, beach chairs, and umbrellas, returning to their cars. Kit hoped Manny would explain to her what just happened, but he only pushed on ahead. She had to jog to keep up.
"Hey," she said. "Hey, Manny, wait up."
She dodged left and right to avoid running into people walking in the opposite direction. "Are we gonna get in trouble for that?"
"Trouble? Why should we get in trouble?"
he said over his shoulder, not stopping. Kit said nothing and jogged behind him. It was one thing to steal out of necessity, but the meal they had eaten was lavish. They could have had McDonald's for under a dollar. This was stealing for the fun of it. The way he made a show of picking the nicest table and ordering like a king somehow made it extra deviant.
"Look," Manny said, "I worked in a restaurant once, and you know, they comp people all the time. Crazy thing is, they give free meals to people who need it the least. Politicians, celebrities, power players, what have you. The way I figure, if those people get a free meal, why shouldn't I?"
Kit didn't have a ready response to his logic, nor did she have any moral ground to stand on, considering that they had met when she was trying to steal his lunch. Manny finally slowed down to a pace Kit could match. They strolled up the boardwalk and came across a long pier with a wooden souvenir shop called Murdoch's Bathhouse. The building was long and narrow, and she could see all the way to the back. Inside, it was a treasure box. Hanging on the ceiling and walls, stacked on shelves, and dangling from displays were dried starfish and seahorses, painted sand dollars, jewelry made of shells of every color, papier-mâché parrots on perches, ships floating in glass bottles, pastel-colored t-shirts with silly slogans, key rings, magnets, and statuettes. There were saltwater taffies and pralines in a long glass display, lollipops the size of plates. Kit wanted to touch each thing. She could spend a year in this place. Manny clucked at her.
"Hey, let me get you a little something to mark the moment," he said. "Anything strike your fancy?"
There was a display table in front of her with a rack of ornaments made of pink shells. She pointed to a tiny hanging chandelier, no bigger than her hand.
"What is it?" she asked.
"I don't know. It's pretty, though, isn't it?"
"Sure is," she said.
"Take it," he said.
"Take it?"
She knew what he meant, but she was feeling guilty about the big dinner they'd eaten without paying.
"I don't have any money for that."
"Didn't you just see 1,000 little shells like that on the beach? It's fine, just take it. Think how happy it will make you. They won't miss a thing."
She looked up and down the boardwalk. People passed by in twos and threes. There were too many people.
"No," she said. "I'll get caught."
"Suit yourself,"
he said with a slash of bitterness that surprised Kit and walked off in the direction of the car. It stung to see him pivot so harshly away, and she was angry at him for setting her up like this. She didn't need the damn shells. Why risk getting caught now after they'd already skipped out on the dinner bill? Why would he push their luck? She was starting to think ripping people off was more than just a prank to him. Maybe this was how he rolled. Maybe it was a test to see if she could keep up with him. And it all came down to this 60-cent trinket. It had been a near-perfect day. She'd dipped in the ocean for the first time, floated on her own, eaten like a queen. All her life, people had treated her like she was less than nothing. With Manny, she felt important, prized even. What was a little petty theft in exchange for the world? She knew in that moment she wanted to stay with Manny, and if stealing was the price, she would pay it gladly. She brushed past the display without looking at it, hooked the chandelier with her pinky, and sprinted back to the car. Chapter 11. Kit stayed with Manny from that point on. For several months, Kit worried the moshers or child welfare had put out pictures of her and that she would get snatched up and taken from Manny. She had nightmares about it and one night woke up heart pounding, clinging to him like a tree frog, though she had started the night in her own bed. But no one came for her. And after some time, she took for granted the life she had with Manny. He told her she was free to leave whenever she wanted, but she had no desire. They moved from motel to motel, using a different alias at each new place. Their dark hair and nut-brown skin made it easy for anyone who noticed to accept them as father and daughter. In the early days, they did whatever they wanted. When there was money, they slept in the dark, cool box of the motel until he woke up. When the money ran out, they would sleep in the car. He keeled back in the driver's seat, she tucked into the den of the trunk, which he left propped up with 2 cans of refried beans. He said if anyone tried to kidnap her, the cans would fall and the racket would wake him up, and somehow she found that comforting. They played cards, snuck into the movies, stole quarters at the arcade and played all day and into the night. He taught her how to drink whiskey neat, and how to roll a smoke with one hand. If anyone saw them and asked why she wasn't in school, they said she had terrible cramps. That shut people up real quick. On the best days, he would ask her to help him score.
"You're my lucky rabbit's foot," he'd say. "I ought to wear you around my neck."
How rich she felt when he put his faith in her. The first time he took her out, he stopped a homely woman in a blousy, flowered dress and moccasins at the grocery store and doffed his hat.
"Excuse me, ma'am," he said, soaking her in the blue of his eyes. "My girl here wants to make chocolate chip cookies, and I just wouldn't know where to begin. Can you help us out?"
She brushed her feathered hair away from her neck and took a fluttering look at him.
"Well, that's easy," she said, gesturing down the aisle. "Baking supplies are just right over here. But, no offense, isn't this a mother's job?"
Her tone was not suspicious, but hopeful.
"Her mother? Well, she's not around anymore," he said with a lowered voice and a sad smile, in a way that suggested her mother had left them.
When the woman heard Kit was a motherless child, and he a brave father doing his best to raise a daughter on his own, she seemed to take them up as a personal mission. A jealousy billowed up, and Kit held him by the wrist, tight as she could, to feel his pulse against her palm. The woman clasped her hands below her chin, moved by her own generosity.
"I'm gonna fix you right up," she said, taking Kit by the hand. "Y'all follow me."
She led them to the baking section and scrutinized each product, making sure he got the best deal on flour and the right kind of chocolate. While she was absorbed in the task of her random act of kindness, he slipped his hand inside her plush suede purse, deft as a lover. Kit couldn't believe the things women kept in their purses. Huge sums of loose cash, diamond earrings, salad dressing. One woman had had a little pouch filled with a couple dozen teeth Kit hoped belonged to her children. Manny thanked the woman with a humble, honeyed kindness, and she sashayed away, looking like she'd just been told a juicy secret. Kit had a hard time shaking the feeling that she would get caught, and sometimes she felt bad for the people they stole from. Usually, it was people with plenty of money. But sometimes, Manny picked someone just because they looked gullible. When she voiced her concern that they should focus on wealthy targets and leave regular folks alone, Manny reasoned that they weren't being violent, and most of the time he was making the woman feel so good about themselves they wouldn't even know they'd been robbed. It wasn't worth it to argue with him. Depending on his mood, he would either dismiss her or be offended. She often worried he might get rid of her. None of the foster families had kept her more than a year, and she had developed a sense for when she was on her way out. She was getting that sense with Manny. He wasn't making as much eye contact, and he seemed to find fault with every little thing she did. Even when she was easy and played along, even when she did everything right, she still got the feeling he was fed up with her. She had never tried to stay with the foster families. They had never given her much reason to. But with Manny, she was determined. She wondered if maybe he didn't want her to play along. Maybe he needed her to be more active, aggressive even. He had called her special that day on the way to Pecan Hollow, so she tried to imagine how she could live up to that, how she could contribute and earn her keep. Finally, after about a year of doing things his way, she came up with her own plan. She told it to him one day as they were sitting at a drive-in, waiting for the show to start. They were there to see Five Easy Pieces for the seventh time. Manny knew certain scenes by heart, and he would laugh his ass off every time Jack Nicholson told the waitress to hold the chicken salad between her knees.
"There's something about that guy," he said, shaking his head. "He just does it for me."
She was so nervous to tell him about her scheme, she hadn't touched her popcorn. When the previews started up, she knew she only had a few minutes to deliver the pitch before he would be absorbed in the movie.
"Hey, Manny," she said. "I think I have an idea."
"Oh, yeah?"
Manny mumbled through a handful of popcorn. His attention was focused on the screen. She'd have to be quick and convincing.
"Yeah, I think I thought of a way to make us some money."
Manny looked at her, a half-smile brightening his face. He was giving her an opening.
"Okay, so it's still a little rough," she said.
His eyes, so bright and direct, made her stammer.
I don't know.
Manny looked intensely at her.
"Don't humble yourself," he said. "You know. Now say it."
Kit took a deep breath and shook out her trembling hands.
"Okay, so I think we should go to Houston for this one. Find a grocery store near one of the oil money neighborhoods. We find a Mercedes or a Jaguar or something and wait for the owner to come back. Just as they're backing out, I get hit."
"You get what?"
he said, turning toward her. Now she had him. She had never been this direct with him before, going for what she wanted.
"I get hit. I throw myself behind the car and get hit. Not too bad, but bad enough that there's blood or scrapes or something they can see."
"This is wild, kitty cat,"
he said, thumbing the stubble on his chin like he was thinking it all over, then waved at her to keep going.
"But I'll save my questions for the end. Go on."
She was doing her best to act cool, but she could feel the blood in her cheeks and the nerves in her voice.
"I figure most decent people would get out and try to help," she said. "That's when you slip in and grab whatever they left behind. Handgun, jewelry. If there's a purse, take some money, but leave the bag."
He nodded as he considered her plan.
"I like your thinking, kitty cat. Rich people never know how much money they have on them,"
he said, rubbing his hands together.
"What next?"
Encouraged by his reaction, Kit stopped hedging and carried on more confidently.
"Right, so you take what you can from the car. While you're in there, I'm talking to the person who hit me. I make them feel sorry for me and try to guilt them into giving me money for the damage. They cough up a few $100 thinking they got off easy, and you get to carry me off looking like a hero."
Her heart thumped, and she was grinning with pride. The opening credits began to roll, and Manny didn't even notice.
"Okay," he said, "but I can't have you injured for real. How can we be so sure they don't take you out seriously?"
"It's not a problem. I don't get hurt."
Manny laughed and stuck his hand into the bag of popcorn.
"I know you're a tough little bitch, but what the hell do you mean you don't get hurt?"
He looked skeptical. She had not specifically told him about her condition before. She hardly understood it herself and was worried he might think she was some kind of mutant. But he would need to know if she was going to convince him to try the con.
"Ever since I was little and something happens to me, like I break a finger in a car door or something, it doesn't hurt. I can tell something's wrong, but I don't feel the pain."
Manny seemed to be mulling the implications of this new development.
"You can't feel pain," he said.
The movie had begun, but instead of tuning in, he cranked up the window to block out the sound. Then he pulled out a lighter and held it out for her. Thinking he wanted a smoke, Kit fished a cigarette from its pack on the dash and handed it to Manny. He stuck it behind his ear.
"Give me your finger," he said.
Kit understood now that he didn't believe her. She hadn't expected him to ask for proof, and she felt uneasy that he would be willing to risk hurting her if she was lying. But she wanted a chance to run this game so he could see she was worth keeping around. She took the lighter from him and flicked it aflame. She hesitated, Her heartbeat quickened. Though she knew she would not feel the burn, she had never tried to do herself harm. The light winked in the reflection of Manny's eyes, and his smile egged her on. She sucked in a breath and split the flame with her finger.
"Hot damn, little sister," Manny said.
Kit glanced at him and kept her finger there until it blistered and she could smell her skin. He slapped his thigh and laughed out loud.
"Kitty cat, you are bad to the bone."
He removed the plastic top from his soda and plunged her finger into the icy drink. Kit smiled, relieved that she seemed to have won him over.
"Can we try it out tomorrow?"
"I can hardly wait,"
he said, and rolled the window back down. Kit's idea turned out to be a cash cow. Except for a few tweaks, they followed her plan and it worked every time. Kit even got into the theatrics of it. And the more she could play the part, the less guilty she felt about ripping these people off when they'd done nothing wrong.
"I'm so clumsy," Kit would say.
And of course, the woman, women usually had more stuff to steal in the car, feeling terrible, would be moved by this and correct her.
"No, sweetie, I'm clumsy, you poor thing."
They would ask where it hurt, and Kit would point a shaking finger to the point of impact, which often had scrapes and emergent bruising.
"I'll be okay, though. I really have to go."
Kit would try to stand up and collapse. The woman would shriek and fuss over her. Then Kit would grasp the fine silk blouse, look up into the woman's eyes, and deliver the lines Manny had written for her.
"Please, ma'am, I'm so worried about my daddy. If he has to stay home and take care of me, he'll lose his job, and he won't be able to pay our bills. Can you help us? Please, don't tell him I asked you. He's too proud."
Some seemed to feel real compassion for Kit. Others acted like they wanted to make the problem go away. But Kit and Manny always got paid. Then Manny would show up horrified.
"My baby, what happened?"
he'd moan. The woman would be emptying out her purse to help the poor family. Manny would refuse, at first. Then Kit would take the money and thank them kindly. One man wrote a $1,000 check made out to cash. Even if they could only do it every month or so to give Kit time to heal, the game was a jackpot. Better than the money, though, was the way Manny carried her away and spoiled her afterward. Sweets, movies, roller rinks. One time he had even taken her to a nice hotel, the kind with room service and fresh flowers in the lobby. She held his attention for another year or so running these cons before he started drifting. As Kit got older, Manny seemed less interested in taking her to work. She was growing, and when she looked in the mirror, her features seemed all out of whack. Her nose spread out, her face grew round, and made her narrow eyes look piggish. Maybe she wasn't as useful if she wasn't cute. The less he took her out, the more she worried she would wake up one morning and he'd be gone. But it wasn't just that he didn't take her out. He was acting bad, too. Sometimes, he went to the bars and came back with loud women who would burst through the door, laughing out smoke and grabbing him by the crotch. It made her furious to see him drunk or high and distracted while she had waited all night, counting the water stains on the ceiling and biting her toenails to the quick. Manny and his guest would go at each other with her in the room, so Kit would have to slink out with a blanket and stew in the parking lot or by the pool, if there happened to be one. One woman Kit had liked. Her name was Red. They were staying at a motel outside a tiny town called Harper, Texas. The motel looked nice on the outside, with its striking A-frame registration building. But inside the rooms, there was a loud odor of must and armpits. Kit had been hanging around all day watching the tube and picking at her nails, just waiting for Manny to get home. He dragged Red through the door around 11 without introducing her and disappeared into the bathroom. It seemed like he was in a mood. The shower shrieked on and steam seeped out the bottom of the door. Red was stirring to look at. Long-legged, all done up, in high-waisted jeans with fringed holes in the butt cheeks, a peasant blouse that showed her midriff, high-heeled cowgirl boots, her blonde hair teased and piled on top of her head like a drawstring purse. Kit thought it must take a lot of work to look like that. The woman eyed her surroundings and landed on Kit.
"Well, hi! How are you?"
she said, as if they had known each other all their lives.
"I'm Red. It's Winifred, actually, but Lord, who goes by Winifred? Can you imagine? What's your name?"
She couldn't hide a smile.
"I'm Kit." "Kit? I love that! Three letters, just like me. How fun! I love names."
Kit sized up the newcomer, completely unprepared for this level of pep.
"You like my outfit?"
Red posed, hands on hips. Weight shifted hard to the left.
"It's new. I gotta stay fresh, or the boys will get bored and the cops will get wise. Not like they don't know me already, but anytime there's a newbie, they haul me in and I gotta go through the whole shebang like it's my first bust. And it's just tiresome at this point, you know? The cops and me, we got a gentleman's agreement that they let me work my territory, and I throw them a freebie from time to time. Very clean, very private, no issues whatsoever, and we all live together in peace."
Kit fidgeted with her jeans, unsure how to talk to this person. Red fished a frosty Dr. Pepper from the ice bucket and pulled the tab with some difficulty.
"These nails, I swear, they are barely worth it. But you know, it's all part of the fantasy, right? You wouldn't think it, but at heart, I'm a very practical girl. It's true. Don't look at me like that. Underneath the glamour, I'm a sneakers and capris kind of girl."
"How long have you known Manny?" Kit asked.
"Manny? Oh boy, couple years now. Whenever he comes through town, we do a job or two. He's a piece of work. He'd steal a walker from an old lady. No scruples, none whatsoever. But I don't judge. Not me. No way. I've seen ministers and doctors and husbands do stuff. Well, I won't even start. But let's just say, between you and me, let's just say this. The better they try to look on the outside, the more nasty shit they got going on in their hearts. And that's a fact. And I might be a dropout, but I've seen everything you could see, and that's worth something, don't you think?"
"Is he..." Kit paused halfway through a question that only had one answer she wanted to hear. "Are you together?" At this, Red cackled and coughed, and Kit could smell menthols on her breath.
"Oh, that's the sweetest thing I ever heard. I mean, he is a fine specimen, and in another life, I would absolutely fuck him. But no, we're business associates."
"What do you mean by that?" Kit asked, jealous to learn she wasn't Manny's only partner.
"Well," Red said, looking toward the bathroom, "I guess it's okay to tell you. You're cool, right?"
Kit nodded. She didn't volunteer that Manny had Kit stealing for him, too.
"For example," Red said, leaning in and lowering her voice, "Big Shot and a caddy pulls up. Maybe didn't wake up this morning looking for a date. But I walk by and..."
She drags her fingertips from her head to her hips and back again.
"Well, he didn't see me when he woke up this morning. So he pulls up and winks, and I lean through the window and compliment him on his big car and his big hat. And what else is big in there, if you know what I mean? 90% of what I do is flattery. And all the while, Manny is popping the trunk and takes whatever he can get. He's very smooth.
What if you get caught?
Well, if they catch you, it's not like they can call the cops because I just rat on him. But the problem is, they won't be paying for sex anytime soon. Not from me. Can't hardly blame him, though, can you?
You're a whore? Kit said. She realized the idiocy of this question only after it came out of her mouth. Red set to laughing again, holding her crotch with one hand, waving off Kit with the other.
I can't! Stop it! I'm gonna wet myself!
She waddled to the bathroom with her knees pinched and left the door open, laughing out bursts of urine while Manny showered on. She poked the shower curtain violently.
Where'd you get this girl? She's a stitch!
I told you, didn't I? She's my niece,
Manny said, his voice muted from the steam and rush of water.
Nice, huh?
She flushed the toilet and arranged some fallen strands of hair around her face and pouted at her reflection.
Who are your parents? How come he never mentioned you before? I have 5 sisters. Well, 4, actually. God bless her. Linda's with the Lord. She drowned in a creek when we were all teenagers, drinking and cutting up and being stupid. That's why I don't drink anymore on principle. Keeps me sharp anyway, and you gotta be sharp to stay in this business. I'm not joking. Razor sharp.
She drew a long, magenta nail across her throat.
Especially when you're a free agent like me. You gotta be smarter than the streets.
That was the first thing Red said that made any sense. She washed up, came back to the bedroom, and lit a cigarette.
So, did you get your period yet? First kiss? Tell me everything.
Kit could not begin to address these questions, aloud or even to herself. Her cheeks and chest fired up, and she found her glass of water on the table and drank it all down as a distraction. She was almost 15, and the dreaded change was happening. For a few months, her chest had burned and prickled, and there'd been a marrow-deep pulsing in her thighs and knees. She was stretching and warping and growing dark hair everywhere. She looked and felt like a werewolf.
Oh, sweetheart, Red said, and bit her knuckle in regret. I didn't mean to embarrass you with my big mouth, but you don't need to be ashamed of those things, not at all.
She squatted and dropped her weight on her high heels, wobbling a bit, probing Kit with eyes encumbered by long nights and heavy mascara.
I bet it's not so easy to be you right now. I remember what that feels like. Everything's confusing. No one hardly talks to you straight. Even with all those women in the family, I still didn't understand sex until I was plumb in the middle of it.
Kit could see straight down the front of Red's shirt, crowded by her breasts, full and tan, like 2 buns, risen, baked, and buttered. Breasts, and all they brought with them, were a beautiful, but unwanted burden Kit was not ready to carry. Even though it embarrassed her, it was nice to be spoken to this way, like these matters of the body weren't so frightful. It stirred up a desire for a female friend, a sister maybe, someone she could talk to about things that were too private for Manny. Red pulled a pen out of her purse and found a square of rolling paper on the table where Kit sat.
Let's make a deal,
Red said, and scribbled something on the translucent swatch.
You have a question. I'll answer it best I can.
She held out the note, her nails lengthening her fingers by a solid inch.
This is me. You call or swing by whenever you need to. Wait, strike that. I work 10 at night till 3 in the morning, so don't come knocking till afternoon. I gotta get my blowy sleep.
Then she winked. Kit smiled and folded the note into her pocket. She considered the offer seriously, brightened by the possibility of confiding in someone. Red smiled. Her lipstick faded now so you could see the true outline of her lips. Thin, younger in their natural state. Kit did not know if she could follow through, but was comforted to know she had the option. Manny came out of the bathroom in a puff of steam, hair combed back, wearing a blue satin button-down, bell-bottom jeans, and a huge oval belt buckle studded with gemstones. Kit noticed the wrinkled bend in the leather 4 notches away from where Manny had fastened it and imagined the fat cat rancher he must have stolen it from. Could he have slipped it off undetected? She was glad she hadn't voiced this thought aloud when she realized the man must have been naked when they stole his belt.
"My father always told me no good ever came of 2 women alone in a room together," Manny said. "What are you 2 conspiring about?"
His attempt at humor didn't quite conceal a strain of jealousy. He looked at Red, stretched out on the bed like she shouldn't be there.
"You're not going to make me party alone, are you?"
he said.
Red rolled her eyes. "I came to work. You want to get loaded? Fine, but don't drag me into it. I aim to get paid today."
At this, she pulled a tiny emery board out of her clamshell purse and began to file away an invisible snag. Manny sat on the bed across from Kit's seat at the table.
"How about you, kitty cat? Want to try something fun?"
She didn't like his tone. He seemed different, like he was on another plane shouting through an opening. She shook her head. Red reached over and slapped him on the hand.
"Leave her alone, you! She's just a kid!"
Manny snatched Red's hand and twisted it around her back. She winced, unafraid and not struggling. He huffed at her ear, as if holding back some bigger action he must have known the situation did not call for. She broke free and clasped her purse shut.
"I'm calling it off. You're too high, and I'm not in the mood anymore."
She turned to Kit.
"Sorry, sweetie, gotta fly."
She took a Dr. Pepper on her way out and hooked the door shut behind her with the toe of her boot. Gelled strands of Manny's hair had fallen into his face.
"I don't know what crawled up her butt," he said.
Kit hated the way his eyes lost focus when he was high.
"I thought she was nice," Kit said.
"She's a slut, don't forget it," he said. "I work with her because she's good. She's smart and determined, and I like that. But don't you listen to her. I won't have you ending up sucking some good old boy's willy for scratch."
Even though she had liked Red, Kit was relieved to hear him insult her. Kit knew she had no rights to Manny, but she had felt something for him, a fever she couldn't name. Sometimes she fell asleep in a chair in front of the television and felt him slip his fingers under her ribs and the pits of her knees and carry her like a treasured thing to her bed. There was a loosey buzz, like a wind fluttering the down on her skin, an urge to press against him, to clamp down so hard she left a mark where her arms had been. She would be 15 soon, and had felt the warm coils of her own desire, especially in the twilight before she woke up each day. But there was nowhere to put it, no one to fumble around with to sharpen the blade of her wanting. Real sex, the actual mechanics of it, seemed so base and humiliating, something people did out of weakness. She had the unfortunate memory of having walked in on the Motchers one time, Fran bent over the bed, Paul heaving himself into her rippling, sunburnt behind. The room had smelled of incense and deli meat, and she could hear the frantic flapping of his balls. If that was sex, she was happy to abstain. On Kit's 15th birthday, Manny was sleeping off a rough night with the curtains closed when she got the idea to take the Mustang for a ride. They had had a fight the previous night, the worst they'd ever had. Kit had been up all night worried, not knowing where he had gone or whether he would be back. When he scuffed through the door looking churlish and hungover around 7 in the morning, he offered no apology. He just sloughed off his shirt and collapsed on the bed. Before he fell asleep, he told her he had been drinking and had taken a swipe at a cop outside an ice house in Houston. They had locked him up and would have pressed charges, but he recognized a dealer in the holding cell with him and told the cops all about the operation the dealer was running. They set Manny free without any trouble, but Kit was furious that he would put them in jeopardy like that. He had taught her precision and planning would keep them safe. They could not afford to be careless. Kit squeezed him to test how heavily he was sleeping. He would be down until after noon at least. She pocketed the keys and slipped out the door, shutting it softly behind her. When the engine started, she marveled at how different it felt to sit in the driver's seat alone, her whole body connecting to the power of the engine. She practiced coordinating the clutch and shifting the gears as Manny had taught her. After stalling out a couple of times, she synchronized the clutch and accelerator smoothly and drove in first gear, getting used to the feel of the road. Even at 10 miles an hour, the ride was thrilling. A semi-truck throttled past, its horn screaming. She swerved onto the shoulder and cursed at the driver 10 different ways. When her heart found its rhythm again, she eased back onto the open road and worked her way up to third gear on a long stretch of bare asphalt. The farther she got from the Adobe Motel, the looser the grip of Manny's influence. The heaviness of his moods and the sting of his criticisms billowed up and disappeared like the dust behind her. When she approached the feeder road to I-10, a massive freeway that stretched from Florida to the California coast, she braked and idled. To be alone, fully in charge of herself, had not appealed to her since meeting Manny. But here, on the crest of a hill under a bald blue sky, she felt high with possibility. It occurred to her that she was old enough to get a paying job, to work for her money for once. Manny's everyday opportunism wasn't doing it for her anymore, and she didn't like the way she felt when they went back to wherever they were staying and Manny dumped out their spoils on the bedspread, sorting through other people's things. She could wait tables or even find work on a ranch somewhere, maybe near Austin, where the air was dry and there was a big public swimming hole with clear natural springs. From between the seats, she fished out a couple of quarters and a dime. She took the next exit and parked the car at a rest stop where there were bathrooms, a water fountain, and a payphone. She fed a quarter through the slot and dialed 0.
"What city, please?"
the operator said with practiced sweetness. "Pecan Hollow."
"What's the name, dear?"
"I just have a first name. Eleanor."
"Let's see here. Eleanor, huh? Just give me a minute, please. I'm gonna see what I can do."
The operator grunted, and it was several minutes before she spoke again.
"Miss, you still there?"
Kit cleared her throat. "Yes."
"Lucky for you, there's only a few hundred people in Pecan Hollow. I have 2 Eleanors here. Is it Rourke or Weber?"
"I don't know. Can I have both? Addresses, too, please."
She used a pen attached to a string that was hanging from the phone book to write the information down, right above an ad for Derby Debris Disposal. Then she heard the velvet call of Manny's voice in her head.
"Where are you off to, kitty cat?"
He would look for her. He would look, and he would find her because he was the only person on the planet who gave a damn about her. And how could she leave, really? It was true. He had been good to her. There was no reason to run except that deep inside, she knew she was not free. That had always been the choice, between freedom and belonging. He had saved her life, and she belonged to him. An old man with a new cowboy hat and slacks up to his rib cage stood there waiting patiently for the phone, a thin newspaper held to his chest. She hung up and tore out the directory page with the numbers and addresses, which she stuffed in her pocket. She turned the Mustang around on the empty road and drove back to the motel absently, as if on rails. When she pulled up to the parking spot outside their room, Manny stood there waiting like a soldier, arms folded, feet spread. She wanted him not to be mad, to hold her and tell her how much he'd missed her, how she'd worried him so, never to leave. But he didn't look likely to do any of those things, so she had to play it cool, not revealing where she had been or how close she had come to leaving him. She got out of the car, not acknowledging him. As she passed, she tossed him the keys and said, "Happy fucking birthday to me." She went inside and flicked on the television, flopped down on the bed. Manny followed her in and turned it off.
"Dadgummit, you're ready,"
Manny said, his smile broad and proud. Kit was hesitant to ask. She didn't like being prompted like this, but neither could she let it go. Was it a new con? A special trip? He seemed weirdly happy, but knowing Manny, it could be a trick. "All right," she said. "Ready for what?"
"Come with me to work today, and you'll find out."